Thanks, Joe, and thank you, Jeff. I want to echo what Joe said about the book, Who. If you're out there listening and you haven't read it, you really should. It's the best book I've read on hiring. It's a very detailed process, and it will not let you down if you follow it. So, Jeff, thank you for that information, and we're excited to have you with us this morning.
Well, thanks, Mary.
And you're talking about your upcoming book, which the good news is it's going to be a great book. The bad news is we're going to have to wait a little while, right?
It's true. Well, thanks. And the Who book is actually, I just checked on Amazon, is the top-selling book on the topic of hiring today.
Wow.
On Amazon. So it's still selling like hotcakes. I'm hopeful that this next book will also be as popular. And the next one's called Power Score, Your Formula for Leadership Success. And it's about how to actually run your teams at full power once you hire them in.
Excellent. We hear a lot today about teams, about working in teams and building our teams. And it actually is one of the top four skills that employers are looking for right now. So it's a very timely topic. So I would start the interview with what's the big idea? So what? What are you going to tell us that we haven't already heard?
Yeah, so the big idea is we've identified three things that matter the most in predicting a leader's performance in running his or her team. And this is based on the largest data set ever assembled on the topic. So I'll tell you one sec about the data, and then I'll tell you what the big idea is. So the data comes from 15,000 in-depth interviews that my consultants at GH Smart have done over the course of about nearly 20 years now. About 2,000 of these are in a format that were statistically analyzable by research teams from a couple top universities. It's 9 million data points in all went into I'm about to tell you. So it's kind of the opposite, Mary, of like, this is one guy's opinion. Like, this isn't one guy's opinion, right? This is based on if you lined up 15,000 people's opinions and distilled out, you know, what contributes to their success or failure in leading their team. So if I could get a little bit of a drum roll, please, I'll tell you what the three things are that we found. All right. So, and the three things actually spell power. That's why we titled the book Power. The first thing that matters is priorities.
Mm-hmm.
So we found that leaders who are good at saying, do we have the right priorities here? What are we going to do? What are we not going to do? That's one of the key ingredients in the formula for leadership success. The second one is who, you know, which shouldn't shock you, but we found one of the areas that was most important and most rare in leaders is their ability to hire and develop talented teams. So the second one's called who, like who you have on the team. Do we have the right people who are on the team? And the third most important thing, these are not rank ordered. These are the three most important things in leadership. The third one's called relationships, which is, Mary, less about building relationships to get along and more about building relationships that get results. So we got a whole bunch of interesting stats and stories under those three buckets, but the big headline is if you want to be a successful leader, focus on do we have the right priorities, do we have the right people who are on the team, and do we have the right relationships that are getting results.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about priorities. I mean, that's not a new concept. We've all heard about priorities, and we know that if we're going to be successful, we need to prioritize what we do. But what's unique about this?
Yeah, I agree. I think there are actually lots of really good books just on prioritizing alone. I think The Four Disciplines of Execution is one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's currently the best-selling book on goal setting. So this finding, our book integrates all the, you know, the best of findings in these three areas, basically. So only 24% of leaders are really good at setting priorities. So that's not too hot. So even though people know it's important, not that many are good at it. So we say, okay, so if you want to be good at we'll do an exercise here in a second with your readers before we go to full Q&A, where I'll actually, or your listeners, we'll get them to calculate their team's power score. But I'll just give you a headline on to answer your question. So we find that the leaders who excel at prioritizing, create priorities that are connected to the mission of the organization. They create priorities that are correct, like they're actually able to identify through analysis and talking to people and looking at numbers and that kind of thing, like what matters most here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the priorities, the last one that, you know, gets a lot of attention is, you know, are the priorities clear? Because it's almost a cliche now in management and leadership where if the senior folks know what the priorities are but no one else does, you know, that won't amount to a hill of beans.
Right. And if I know it, and even if I've told you about it, but I don't reinforce it, and Joe, I think you can comment on this, that one of the ways to keep those priorities in front of people is to talk about it day after day after day.
I've seen that so many times in businesses where you set some priorities and then you don't talk about it frequently enough. And I used to get accused sometimes of talking about things ad nauseum, but the good leaders need to, once you figure out what that direction is, you need to talk about it over and over and over again, because there's turnover, there are other things on people's plate, and the leaders need to talk about what's important and need to talk about it repetitively, particularly the direction that you want the organization to go. I found that as a result of me talking about it so frequently that it sort of drifted down, and others in the company would do the same kind of thing, which tended to keep the whole organization focused on heading in the same direction.
Love it. It's almost like, Joe, you can't speak enough about priorities. That, you know, tell them what the priorities are. Tell them again. Jim Donald, the CEO of Extended Stay Hotels, sends a voicemail out, and he's done this for the last 20 years, to all of his employees every day on what the priorities are, which is awesome.
Wow.
So, and Mary, watch this. Your listeners can rate their team's performance and priorities on a 1 to 10 scale. And the scale is like 10 means we have really clear priorities. They are widely discussed, debated, agreed upon, communicated, like Joe is saying. That's like a 10. They're connected to our mission. Crystal clear, that's a 10. Your listeners, if you would please rate your priorities, do we have the right priorities? A 5 would be like, we have a general sense of what we're trying to accomplish on this team, but we've not discussed or debated to know if they're really the right priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 3 would be like, we have a vague sense of what we're trying to achieve, but it's not very specific. A 1 would be, we've not thought about our priorities at all. Yeah, what priorities?
Yeah.
We're just doing stuff without a sense of what's expected or why. So if your listeners and folks online can please just take 1 second and just rate 1 to 10 your team's priorities. We're gonna rate each the P, the W, and the R to calculate your power score.
So what can I do to make it easier to stay concentrated on, or focused on the priorities? Because I can set priorities and I can talk about them, but I come in this morning and, you know, the pucky has hit the fan, and so everything else sort of goes out the window. What can I do to bring myself back into line to focus about the priorities?
Yeah, so the common pitfall or problem is leaders actually have too many of them. So when pucky hits the fan, it's really easy to lose sight of what the short list of priorities are that matter most. And yes, of course, when there's a crisis, deal with the crisis. But we found in our research that 90% of the time, when leaders and their teams say that they're not good at prioritizing, it's because they have too many priorities as opposed
mm-hmm.
to too few. So I'd say that's a great place to start. And here's one
if,
more
if
little
I can hitchhike on that a little bit. If as a leader you allow yourself to deal with too many priorities, you wind up getting, you confuse yourself. Whereas good leaders push decision making down the ladder so that they're not confronted with 100 different items. They're confronted with 3 or 4 or 5, a key number of issues that they can deal with. So it really goes back to the matter of delegation. If you delegate responsibility and push decision-making down where it belongs, you're not going to get yourself confused with too many priorities.
There you go. And it's all about, like, not wasting human energy, right, Joe, where, you know, we
exactly.
all have a scarce amount of energy and time and money, and if we could put that energy against the highest priorities that matter most, by definition, we'll create the best results for our customers.
Right.
Well, that's priority.
If I can stop you just for a moment, I have an
sure.
online question, and that is, how many priorities are too many?
More than Joe, let's discuss and debate this. My humble opinion is 3 is a good number. I've seen really great leaders like you and others who seem kind of to love the idea of 3 priorities. It's really hard to get it down to 1 or 2, and once you get to kind of 4+, folks' eyes glaze over. What's the right number, Joe?
I can tell you from my own experience, the 2.5. And here, my job as a CEO was to make major strategic decisions. Now, but he always did that with the input of other people. But you know, it came to a big picture strategy that rested in the hands of in the lap of the CEO. And the same is true of high level personnel decisions. And you know, you always made those with the input of a lot of other people. Hopefully, make good ones. But and you make them, and that's your responsibility at senior level. So those are two. The third one is I like to be involved in where we're going to go for lunch. I thought that was an important topic.
Nice.
I love it. Yeah, I think I'm with you. It's really hard, actually. It requires decisiveness, right, to arrive at the short list of priorities. And in our giant research study here, we figured out that only, let's see, where was I? I just had it a second ago. Only 9% of leaders are considered decisive when it comes time to narrowing the priority list down. Only 9% are decisive in that way. So that's a really great opportunity for those listening to differentiate themselves in their careers and in their organizations. If you can get on the top end of that list of being decisive and helping narrow in the priorities, it's a good way to stand out.
Absolutely. This is another one of those topics where less is more, or in my case, fewer are more, right?
Yes.
Yes. And if I can just quick hit you, if you're in a situation where you've got too many priorities and I mean you're working on narrowing them down, sometimes just sitting down with your boss and saying, hey, boss, I got these things on my, just help me prioritize them. And you may get good thinking about what he or she's thinking, and it'll help you get yourself organized so that you're putting the most effort into the few things that really count.
You bet. There's a little chart that helps people do that I've seen used. And actually, just this morning, I was in a board meeting with a $20 billion company. And the way they do it is it's like a 2x2 matrix where what are priorities that are worth doing? That's on the up-down matrix, so high, low. And then across the x-axis, what are the priorities that are not doable to doable? And so if you picture the top right quadrant there, the question really becomes, you know, what are the priorities that are both worth doing and doable? And, hey, let's put a bunch of energy on those things.
Right. So we're not wasting our time.
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, let's move on then to talk about the who.
My favorite topic.
Oh, let me guess. Someone should write that book. Oh, wait, someone has written that book. So talk to us a little bit about choosing the correct team members.
All right, Mary, guess what percent of leaders are good at the who, at hiring and developing talented teams? According to our research, you know, so it's just our take on it, but out there in the big bad world, what percent of leaders are good at hiring and developing talented teams?
15.
Yeah, you got it. It's 14%. So,
oh wow,
you're good. Wow, look at you having your finger on
and
the pulse.
And you didn't tell me that.
No, this is not planned. So
this is not a setup. That's right.
It's you're just really good at estimating. So it's true though. So few leaders are good at hiring and developing talented teams. And actually, in the Wall Street Journal review of our Who book a few years ago, back in 2008, they said, you know, isn't this one of the most important aspects of management and businesses, you know, hiring and developing talented teams, and yet doesn't it seem like so few managers are any good at it? And one of my life missions is literally to help managers and leaders get better at hiring and developing talented teams. So there's not a lot new on this one, and since we covered who on the last call, I would just offer your listeners to go ahead and score their teams on the who. And the who is literally like if you score your team as a 10, that means we have 100% A players, everybody here is the right person in the right place, and that like a 5 would be like we have, you know, 50% A players or 50%, you know, of the folks are really the right people in the right spots. You know, a 2 would be like we have 20% of the right folks. So 1 to 10, how would your, you know, listeners rate your teams on, you know, do we have the right people? And you know, when we do this with companies, we actually usually say for the whole organization, not just that exact management team. So for your whole organization, to what extent do you have the right people who are there? 100% is a 10, 50% is a 5, 10% is a 1. So rate 1 to 10.
I know that for Joe, as he mentioned before, that was one of the absolute priorities, and I know that he spent a lot of time. I know your book talks about all the interviews that can happen and all the time that you spend with people, and in this case, more is better. The more people that meet that person, the more time that you spend, the more comfortable they get and more honest they get with their answers, the more likely you are to make a good decision. Joe, do you want to chime in on this?
Well, that's absolutely correct, and I've learned so much over the years. I wish I knew 50 years ago what I know today about the hiring process. But it's a lot of hard work. It's difficult, and the whole top grading process is wonderful. But we're all going to make mistakes, no matter how good we are. And the one thing that most of us are guilty of, including me, is not facing up to those issues quickly enough.
Mm-hmm.
When your instinct tells you you made a mistake, you know you made a mistake, the sooner you correct that situation, the better for yourself, the better for the person involved, and the better for the people that work for that person involved. Human nature is we tend to procrastinate about issues like that when we should act quickly.
True indeed. One of the lowest competencies in our data suggests it's quote-unquote willing to remove non-performers. It's one of the things that managers are least good at or comfortable at. And that's right, Joe. We hear very often that the clients, one of their biggest regrets is waiting too long to move someone on who's clearly not a good match for a particular role. So that's the one sentence summary of that whole book is just there are four steps to good hiring that Joe's talking about, and if you follow them, you can achieve a 90% hiring success rate. If you don't follow them, good luck. Peter Drucker, 50 years ago, estimated that the average manager makes a hiring mistake 50% of the time.
Wow.
And that data continues through the early 2000s and research we've done. So making a hiring mistake half the time is really painful. Imagine if you could get it right 9 out of 10 times. And so the four steps to getting it right 9 out of 10 times are, the first step is called scorecard, where you really just sit down and think, you know, what are the outcomes that that an A player, that someone who's achieving an A performance in this role would achieve, like outcomes, not just inputs and activities, but the actual results. Second is source, where, you know, how do you source talent? Well, you source talent through your network, and a lot of best leaders we know don't just put out job postings and wait for whoever and their brother and their sister to apply, but actually work their networks actively. Third step's called select, and that's what Joe's talking about with all the interviews. There are some good interviews that can actually get the truth out of folks and help you understand them for who they really are. And then the fourth step is called sell, which is often forgotten by managers. Once you decide who you want to hire, you're not done yet. You got to actually sell the person and close the deal, and that takes some finesse and care as well. So scorecard, source, select, and sell are the four steps for good hiring.
Wow. I kind of get it if I'm a new manager and I haven't had experience before, and I might make some mistakes, and that would probably demoralize me. But what about managers who have some experienced, seasoned people? Why do you think it is that they don't go to the effort to learn how to hire better?
Well, it's not their fault, Mary, because chances are haven't been trained on this important skill, not in elementary school, not in college. Harvard Business School is creating a WHO module, to my knowledge, it'll be the first business school that actually has a curriculum built around good hiring. So I joke with people who are in their 40s or 50s or 60s, and they say, you know, I'm no good at this. I said, well, you shouldn't be, because there's no one's really taught you how to do this. But that's partially in jest, because now, you know, there are methods that work really well. I'll tell you, the older seasoned folks fall into the trap of putting too much credence on a referral from a trusted friend. Too much. So, hey, Mary, oh, yeah, this person's great. You should hire them. And then you hire them. But meanwhile, maybe they worked in my organization. I didn't even know them that well. Maybe I met them once on the golf course. So I'd say if you're a more seasoned manager, be really wary of hiring someone on the basis of one strong recommendation. You know, if there's a great person who comes in front of you who's been highly referred by one of your friends or colleagues, we'll go ahead and start the interview process, but for gosh sake, don't skip the interview process.
Yeah, it's the beginning, not the end of the process. Absolutely. Okay, so we get then to the part about relationships, and I'm really interested to hear you talk about this, because we talk a lot about building relationships and having good relationships, but what you're really talking about, if I understand correctly, is the results, having the relationships that can produce the right results.
Yep, exactly. So do you want to do another guessing game, Mary? Because you're so good at the who won. Okay, so the question is just what percent of leaders are good at building relationships? That's it. Just what would you say?
I would say maybe 50.
Okay, 47%.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Because
I'm thinking, you know, we've heard that all our lives. We know we need to have to be good at it.
Yeah, and guess what? A lot of managers are good at it. In fact, in this power equation of the P is priorities, the W is the who, and the R is relationships, relationships is actually the most common strong area of the three. 47% of leaders are, you know, pretty good at building relationships, which is interesting. One of our publisher at Random House said, well, that's weird because most books on leadership and management are around relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that's the area people are already pretty good at. So we're here to say, yeah, okay, you might be pretty good at it, but it's really important that three things happen within relationships that actually produce the results. One is it's like a matter of coordinating human activity. And I'm thinking of like Atul Gawande's The Checklist Manifesto, and I'm thinking about, you know,
mm-hmm.
processes for people to stay coordinated.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the cadence of communication. So in Joe's world, you know, across his whole career, you know, some priorities require certain people on a quick cadence of communication, daily updates, daily huddles, bup, bup, bup. Some priorities, you know, require teams to get together, you know, quarterly to review progress, that kind of thing. So the question there underneath relationships is really just, frankly, are the right people getting together at the right time intervals? So that's
okay.
That. But having them be committed to each other, not letting people off the hook. When they make commitments, holding them accountable, only 7% of leaders are really good at holding people accountable. Only 7% are good at holding people accountable. So what you see in teams sometimes is, you know, one person will commit to do something to another person, they don't do it. Well, the really good leaders will hold that first person accountable. Bad leaders won't. And the third part within relationships is just challenging folks, like in a good way, saying like, hey, we can do this. And that's part of the role of leader is to challenge the team to really dream a dream and inspire, you know, what we can do. And so that's, we find, is another element of building relationships that get results.
Why wouldn't I? Once I knew that, why wouldn't I?
I hear you. And why wouldn't you calculate, if you're a listener, your team's relationships? So this is, again, a 10-point scale. A 10 is the relationships around here work like clockwork internally with our external customers and partners. Or we hear things like, for a 10, you know, it's a real meritocracy here, or our meetings are highly productive and not a waste of time. You know, this is like what a 10 sounds like in relationships. A 5 would be kind of like some key relationships are not working well, or people around here avoid confrontation, or we're out of sync with each other, that kind of thing. Like a 2 or a 1, a 2 would be like fire drills are the norm, or we are reactive, not proactive as a team, or
mm-hmm.
Problems fester. That's like a 2. A 1 is, jokingly in the book we say, this place is like Lord of the Flies, you know, total uncoordinated chaos. We have no hope of achieving good results. That would be a 1. So please, everybody, rate your team 1 to 10 on relationships, and specifically, like, do we have the right relationships that get results? And what's really cool now is, as people rate their team on that final of the three, Mary, the moment
mm-hmm.
has come
okay.
for folks to calculate their power score.
Okay.
So to calculate your power score, it's as simple as this. Multiply those three numbers together, and you'll
mm-hmm.
get a score. That's your team's power score. It's out of 1,000. 1,000 is perfect. Like 10 times 10 times 10 is 1,000. It's 0 to 1,000, so 0 is like a really bad score. it's like a triathlon, too, where it's multiplicative, where you do have to be good at all three. You can't just, like, you know, be good at the priorities and relationships and skip the who part. Like, you do actually have to be good at biking and running and swimming to run a triathlon. You have to
mm-hmm.
be good at priorities and who and relationships to win in business. So so your folks are probably calculating scores. When they ask questions, I'd love for them to tell us what their team's power score was and then ask the question or then talk about it. 50% of teams score a 400 or better. So the midpoint's kind of 400, power score 400 or better, half or above, half or below. Only 10% of teams score a 729 or better. And, like, why is that an important number? 729 is if you gave yourself a 9 on priorities, a 9 on who, and a 9 on relationships. 9
mm-hmm.
times 9 times 9 is 729. We say, like, hey, Mary, if your team's pulling a 729 or better, keep doing what you're doing. You're running at full power.
Right.
But if you get less than a 729, you might want to tweak one of those three things.
The lowest number. Yeah. You might want to work on whatever it is that you're not doing so well. I want to go back to accountability for a minute while people are calculating, because I met with a client recently this week, in fact, and they said, you know, we have a lot of meetings with leadership. It's not that they're not interested. We meet, and we meet with our teams, and we will agree on what we think the appropriate action is to take, and then we never hear about it again.
Ah, bad follow-through. Hmm?
Yeah. And I think accountability as well. It's not, you know, it's that maybe it got off my radar screen, but maybe it didn't get off my radar screen, but I haven't brought it back to the people that are supposedly making it happen. So how can I, as the person who's not the leader, very gently nudge the person to, you know, let's get back to this. Let's not forget this.
It's uncomfortable. I talked with a young woman last week who's a manager in a big organization, and I was asking her, hey, do you love working here or not? And she said, you know, I really love the work here. There's only one thing that's very frustrating that might make me want to leave. And what she mentioned was exactly what you just mentioned, Mary. She said, here in this department, we have talented people, but it's like a free-for-all, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And the leader of the department will listen to people's ideas or even priorities, like goals, like, hey, let's do this. And the leader will say, oh, that's a really great idea. And then there will be no accountability, no follow-through, and it'll never see the light of day again. So I encouraged her, and to answer your question, hey, look, so the next time as a team you decide something's important, if your boss, if the department leader is unwilling to write it down and to agree to some sort of a cadence of follow-up, then why don't you? And she's like, well, I don't know if that's my role. I'm like, well, it is your role. So I'm telling you, she's the number two person in this group. I'm like, it is your role. You could be like the number two in the group and say, hey, are we serious about improving by 30% this important metric over the next 12 months? Is this something that really we want to set as a priority or not? And if the team says yes, if the boss says yes, well, by golly, you know, write it down. And in that, you know, weekly, monthly cadence, let's track performance versus goal. And just talk about it. Hey, look, we're not there yet. And okay, what's working, what's not working, how do we improve this number? So I think it's kind of fun. A lot of people blame the leader. I say, hey, look, we all can be leaders. So if your leader isn't following up and holding people accountable, you can certainly fill some of that void by just asking the question, how are we doing on that priority?
And I agree with you. I think you're absolutely right, because I think if it's forgotten to the leader, then it's my job to bring it up again and say, where are we with that? And if it went away, if it's no longer a priority, then we all need to know, so we're not, you know, not beating our head against the wall trying to make it happen. But a lot of times people feel that they don't have the authority to do that. So I suggested to my group that they document whatever it was that they thought they agreed to, and have the group right there and then try to identify a deadline for at least the first step. So I have something I can call you back and say, how are we doing with this?
Isn't it neat when one of your team members says, like, oh, I wonder who should do this and by when? And just it's a very innocent question, but it's so powerful. Like, you know, I wonder if we were to get that done, who would be in charge of that, and how often should we follow up on this item? You know, and then everyone can say, like, oh, it's not important, or they say, yeah, it's pretty important. I think Sarah should probably take that. Sarah, you want to take that one? Sarah says, yeah, I'd love to take that one. Tell you what, guys, how about I bring you an update monthly for the next 12 months on how we're doing versus that goal? And then now all of a sudden, you're off to the races.
Yeah, all of a sudden you have an action plan, and it's not, you know, a formal 20-page thing. It's just we all agreed who would do what by when.
There you go. Yeah, who does what by when.
And create a conversation that goes with it so people keep talking about it. I've found that visuals can be very helpful, too. If your goal is to do something by a date, put it on a wall somewhere. If your goal is such a – just put it where people can see it so that you have continual conversation on the topic. Sometimes bosses are too busy being nice folks, and sometimes just a little reminder about holding people accountable from the worker to the boss can make all the difference in the world. The boss recognize, hey, you know, I've really been too lax on this, and boom, let me do something about it.
Yeah, why don't you help me hold myself accountable for this?
And contrary to popular opinion, when you put a chart on a wall, it doesn't make employees mad or sad or embarrassed or whatever. It's actually morale creating. It's
right.
motivating to look at and say, hey, this is something we're trying to do that's worth doing, and let's see. And, oh, we're under plan. Well, let's step it up. Let's make that thermometer chart go from 50% to 100%, you know, on plan.
Right. So I'm guessing, well, actually, I have actually an online question. Does this method, I'm guessing the answer is yes, can I apply this to all sizes and types of organizations? It doesn't have to be a big organization where I've got a lot of people that can keep track of things. I can do this in a small group, can't I?
Yeah, that's what one thing Randy Street, the co-author of WHO, he and I wrote this Power Score book along with Alan Foster, one of our other GH Smart colleagues. We really built this or designed the method to work for any size organization. So actually, this is kind of neat. If it's the smallest organization possible, it's one person. You could check yourself every Monday. I do. I actually use this literally for my own time management. What are my priorities? You know, this year, this month, this week, like what are my priorities? And look at progress versus actuals. Who's the who? Who's paired with those priorities? So I'm a big fan of if the priority is a priority, it should have a champion. Someone should be kind
right.
of in charge of that. So who's the who? And then the relationships. I just have a little check where do I have the right meetings set up, or do I need to set some meetings up? Do I have the right wall dashboards, like Joe was saying, created, or do I need to create those dashboards? And once it's kind of neat, you can manage yourself using this approach, this Power Score approach, by just checking your own priorities, your own who that you're relying on to get stuff done, and the relationship cadence, make sure it's set up. And you can make this as complex as you want with huge organizations and the government or private sector to help them keep on track. We have boards of giant Fortune 500 companies who use this language to check the CEO in a very informal way.
Mm-hmm.
Are we running at full power?
Mm-hmm.
And then when the CEO says no, they say, great, so what? What's going on? And then it's a very easy language for them saying, hey, look, we think our priorities are out of whack. We're going to try to work on these. Or we've got a who problem, or we have a relationship problem.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to
mm-hmm.
know what type of problem it is really helps any organization of any kind solve it.
So I think we're at that place where we'd like to invite callers to call, people who are on the phone to call in. Remember *7 if you've got a question, or type your question in the box and click submit. Joe, any comments before we go to questions?
I was saying, if I can go back a little bit to the relationships we were talking about. We talk about meetings. But one of the ways you can hurt those relationships is by having meetings that just drag on and drag on. If you're the boss and you're running a meeting, be crisp, be right to the point, schedule things clearly, end a few minutes early. That way you develop relationships that really work. And whereas if meetings drag on and they become boring, you do the opposite. You're undermining relationships. One of the interesting things that I did for years and years and years was every other week, roughly, I would be out in the stores, and I would take with me somebody from the buying office and somebody from real estate or somebody. I take usually two or three people with me, and you build relationships with an accountant traveling with a buyer, traveling with a real estate person. All of a sudden, they begin to talk about different kinds of things, and they build relationships that have lasted, in some cases, 20 or 30 years just by being together and working on issues they wouldn't normally be seeing or wouldn't be in as part of their day-to-day. So as a leader, you can create the kind of relationships that really make a difference.
Absolutely, you can.
You're here.
So out there in listener land, what questions do you have? And if you don't have a question, you may just want to call in and give us your score that you have calculated for your team.
I calculated a score.
what are you at? What are you running your team at these days, sir?
I was thinking back to the Tractor Supply days, and I gave us a 10 on priorities because I thought we were very focused on it. I gave us a 7 on the hiring, on the who part, and a 7 on the relationships, and that took me to 490. So I'm a little embarrassed because
you're above the midpoint of 400, and so 10 on the priorities, a 7 on the who, and a 7 on relationships. So we get the 10 on the priorities. I'm curious about the 7 on relationships. What did it look like, and how could it have been even better?
As we grew, and we grew pretty rapidly, I felt that we weren't as connected as we should, as we could and should be. And as I look back, I think we could have done other things, particularly to pull key people together more frequently than we did.
Yep, interesting.
Although I understand some of that's much better now. So,
Joe, thanks for leading by example. See everybody in listener land. Joe has the courage to come forth with his power score. So if you want to ask a question, I'd love it if you tell us your power score, and then we can kind of talk a little bit about it too. So, Mary, do they have to, like, tell you who's has a question?
No, they just have to press *7 and speak.
Oh, okay.
Come on, let's go. Somebody speak up. Press *7.
I have another one online. If I've done my score, and they didn't send the score, but if I've done my score and I see that I really need to improve in one particular area, will there be information in the book about specific actions that I might take in these various areas?
Yeah, that's probably about 60% of the book is on how to improve the P, the W, and the R, and 40% of the book is just how to accurately diagnose yourself.
Okay.
And I'm guessing that their lowest area is the W, because that's what the most common lowest area is.
Okay.
So only 14% of leaders are good at the W, 24% are good at the P, and 47% are good at the R. So if they're like, ooh, mysteriously I have a low area, I'm guessing it's probably the W. But someone's got a question, Mary. I hear the car noise.
Okay. Go ahead.
Person in listener land. *7 and ask a question, please. Nope.
Jeff, the book will be out early next year.
Yeah, I think we're planning April 2015. So we're almost done with it. I think we're on like draft 9. It's been approved. We're just doing cover, art right now and that kind of thing. But it takes them about that much time to print the copies and translate them and get them on bookshelves. But your listeners here they're going to be the first kids on their block to know about the power score concept here. Thanks to the Scarlet Leadership Institute.
There you go.
We will, when the book's available, we'll broadcast it to everybody who's on our mailing list. So
we'll let you know. Yes, we will definitely do that. I have another online question, and again, no one sent their score. I don't know whether people are just not pleased with their score or what, but the question is, or it's a comment, really. My company has a culture of meeting pretty constantly and for very long times. I am not the leader. How can I encourage better meetings?
Joe, can you take this one? Because that question depresses me, given what you said about long meetings.
Well, it is depressing. It's a tough state. Somehow you got to go talk to the boss and let the boss know that you could, we all think you can accomplish more in less time. One of the key things that I always did or learned to do was to set the agenda, share the agenda a day ahead of time, and put times on it. At 9 o'clock we're going to do this, and 10 after 9 we're going to do this, and 9:30 we're going to do this, and at 10 o'clock we're going to be done. And it's just a matter of if you share the agenda ahead of time, everybody gets a little bit of input into it, and then they see the schedule and they're going to stick to it. It's tough though. You got to go to your boss or whoever's running the meeting and say, we've got a lot of work to do here, and we think we could get this done in half the time. And I'd be happy to help you with it, boss. Some bosses who don't want to control the time, and it's very frustrating. And somehow you got to get to that person in whatever way makes the most practical sense in your organization.
Sometimes I think it helps to just say, I'll run it. I'll run this meeting for you. I'll create the agenda, and I'll run the meeting if you will just let me. Because, as you said, some people are just reluctant to want to cut off a conversation. And really, we're being discourteous to all the other people there when we let people just talk forever.
Or at this time of year, you know your boss is going on vacation. Say, boss, I'll run a meeting for you next week. And then when he comes back or she comes back, you say, here's what I did and here's how quickly it went.
And everybody around them is saying, that was such a great meeting. Why don't you be gone more often?
I want to tell you a personal story, and I may have said this on one of the previous calls, but many years ago when I was became chairman of the Retail Industry Leaders Association, which is the association of the biggest retailers in America, as my first role as chairman, I obviously set the agenda for the first board meeting, and I did something that hadn't been done before. I inserted times in it. I shared the agenda, as I mentioned earlier, with most of the key people, and then I took charge. My predecessor there had let the bigwigs from Walmart and Target and Home Depot just ramble on and on and on, and I just took charge because, no, you know, it's a voluntary job anyway. What's the worst they can do is fire you. And I politely told the people from Walmart and Target and Home Depot to shut up. It's time to move on. I did it politely. But I took charge. And after the meeting, most of these guys came to me and they said, Joe, thanks so much for taking charge of this meeting. It went so well. So people, you earn respect when you take charge of meetings.
Excellent. I have another online question, or an online comment, actually. Xerox in the 1970 to 1980 era would score 400 for a sales team. High task to grow, pressure, tough-minded management, and high turnover. So what's your comment to that, Jeff?
Let's see. I don't know if I understand it. So the problem is the high turnover part, I guess?
Well, probably. I'm thinking this person worked there at that during that period, and
yep,
they scored them.
Yep.
So I don't have the individual scores, but
400 is a pretty good score.
It's the midpoint, right?
It's the midpoint, yeah, exactly. Half or better, half or worse. 729
right.
Is what you want to get to. So the turnover. So what I'm hearing in the tone of the question or comment is this is like a chew 'em up, spit 'em out kind of place.
Right.
Which
that's what
isn't,
I'm guessing.
Yeah. So that's not great. That's not a sustainable approach to building a great business, but I am aware that businesses go through phases where it sure feels like that.
And the high pressure, it could be, I would wonder what score they gave the priorities, because it could be that there was one priority and it was sell, 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 or the priorities, and that chewed people up and spit them out really quickly, or the priorities changed very frequently. So it could be either.
From an analytical standpoint, at that point, Xerox was knocking them dead, and they had an arrogance about them that was just beyond belief. And as a result, they're just another player in the game today. I'm not even sure they're still around, but that arrogance that it went to their head created an environment where they were not open to new ideas and fresh thinking. And as a result, they no longer own the business they owned at one time.
Exactly. So there you go. If you're not able to sustain that kind of performance, then it's likely that your future might be questionable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would bet behind the 400 score, I bet you the priorities were probably pretty good. In the grind them up, spit them out cultures,
mm-hmm.
priorities tend to be pretty clear
mm-hmm.
and hard-nosed and like kind of here's your quota or else kind of thing. And then the who part, I would bet that was lower than a 10 because in a high growth and environment, sometimes you bring in folks who aren't so nice or aren't such great managers, and they kind of beat on people and create a worse culture. And then the relationship piece, I'm sure that person scored that one fairly low there, where a grind them up, spit them out culture, yeah, definitely would be like, we're not really creating great relationships here for the long haul.
Right, not for any reason. Star 7, last chance to ask your question and share with us your score.
While we're waiting for Star 7s, Mary, do you want to do one more guessing game? Because you're so good at this.
Okay, let me have it.
Okay, so many business leadership books are about a message of authenticity and honesty and integrity being, you know, the most important qualities of leaders. Mm-hmm. And we agree that it's important, but we found it's fairly common. So my question for you, and I'm just scrolling through my data set here to see the answer, so I make sure I say it right. What percent of leaders do you think are rated high in integrity and honesty?
Are rated by others or rate themselves?
Technically rated by my trained consultants who spend 5 hours interviewing them and talking to their colleagues and that kind of thing. So in this big data set of thousands, what percent of the managers in the database did we rate as, you know, good on integrity and honesty as opposed to bad on the scale of integrity and honesty?
Well, that one I would guess would be much higher, and especially these days when there's been so much emphasis on the other.
Yeah.
I think there's much more good than bad out there. I think we hear about the bad, but there's a lot more good. So I would guess maybe 80 to 90%.
Joe, I think she's a genius. 91%.
Wow.
So you hit it. So our research suggests 91% of leaders are honest and operate with a healthy level of integrity. So yes, you know, folks in listener land, yes, be honest, okay? But it's not going to differentiate you in your career. Being honest is kind of like breathing. You know, it's important to do, but it will not be something that sets you apart from the rest.
It'll hurt you if you don't do it, but if you're doing it, you're just one in the pack.
Right.
Okay. Well,
it's just like breathing, and as you were coming up with that number, I wrote down 85. So we're all
there. You
the
go.
Same.
So we're all in the same. There you go. And Joe, you're always talking about how you feel like there's much more good, many more good leaders than bad in terms of ethics and integrity. We just don't hear about those. They don't make the news. They're not, you know, they're not creating headlines anywhere.
The bad guys all get caught. And when they do, they get a lot of press. And the rest of us who are doing good things don't get any press for doing the right thing. But the overwhelming majority of us are doing the right thing.
Good news. I mean, no news is good news. In that case.
As long as you don't have a question here, Jimmy, I just wrote an article that was posted online with the National Business Journal, which will be published a week from Friday, about the culture at General Motors and about the lack of ethics there. And there's a company who at one time was a powerhouse, but it went to their head, and the culture became such that there was not a culture of integrity and honesty, and they'd rather bury the truth and not talk about things rather than go out and attack the issues. And as a result, this most recent thing of recalling 29 million cars because the ignition switch doesn't work right and it killed 10 people or 50 people or whatever. That's just a breakdown in culture, which is a breakdown in ethics, which is a breakdown in honesty. And when you just maintain doing the right thing all the time, you won't, you know, it's just, as you said before, it's just like breathing. You've got to do it all the time.
Exactly.
Sooner or later, it catches up with you personally, and it catches up with your organization.
Exactly. Well, if we have no questions on the phone, then we will wrap this up. Joe, do you want to tell us once more what's coming up?
Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I'm looking forward to your book. I was really thrilled. My son was telling me all about being a top grading specialist today.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for the chance to spread these ideas, and we hope they're useful for your listeners and your folks.
We're glad to have you on, and thanks so much. And I haven't seen you in a while, but I'm going to be out in Denver in September, I think. So maybe I'll look you up.
Give me a call. That'd be great. Love to take you to lunch.
Great. Thank you so much.
Next week, next month, Thursday, August 17th, Donna Griggs, we're going to talk about change management and creating change in a very positive way, which sometimes is very difficult. So join us then. Everybody have a good summer.
Thank you. And